You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jean Kwok's debut novel, Girl in Translation, deals with a world most of us know very little about, where immigrant children toil in sweatshops in Chinatown in desperate conditions for very little pay. The novel, however, is also about things more familiar to us, the love of a mother and daughter, the trials and tribulations of being a teenager, finding and losing your first love, and above all, trying to find your place in the world. It's published by Riverhead Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome Jean Kwok to our show, Le Homa.
Wow, that was good.
Your novel is about Kimberly Chang, an 11-year-old girl who immigrates to New York from Hong Kong with her mother. Would Kimberly have been her given name in Hong Kong?
No. That's why her mother actually calls her Ah Kim. So Kimberly was a name that was given to her by her Aunt Paula after they came to the United States. And it was given for the express reason of it sounding more natural to an American.
And would New York be the most likely destination for someone coming here?
Oh, yeah. It's a very likely place to come.
They have family here?
Yeah, and just because New York is kind of a symbol for the United States. So, of course, the immigrant dream is really quite vivid abroad. I think when we live in America, it's easy to forget how strong it still is. And when people think of America, one of the first places they'll think of is, of course, New York City.
Of course, Americans, one of the first places they think of in connection to the Chinese is San Francisco. But that is very old, right?
It's older, and of course, yeah, that's also a very important place.
Aren't there some strong similarities between your life and Kimberly's?
There are, because, first of all, this is a novel, and it's a work of fiction, and I deliberately designed it as a work of fiction. However, there are indeed similarities between the novel and my own life, because we came to the United States, to New York City, when I was 5 years old. And like Kimberly and her mother, we were in a situation where we had to start our lives all over again. So we had been fairly well-to-do in Hong Kong, but when we came here, we found ourselves working in a sweatshop and living in an apartment that didn't have central heating, which in New York is really, something else.
It was a condemned building.
It was. It was actually, in real life, it was condemned after we left.
But how can anyone survive a New York winter without heat?
Oh, you do. You do. We did for quite a while.
Wear a lot of sweaters?
You keep warm with as many clothes as you have. But the cold is something beyond what you normally can experience. It's something that I remember it because it was so vivid. But nowadays, with my nice life, it's hard to remember how it was, because when a building is not heated for so long, the entire building radiates cold. The walls, the floors, everything.
And then the apartment was overrun with rodents and roaches. You have a roach licking the toothpaste tube after the top had been left off. It gives you the willies to read that.
Me too, yes. They do that.
Roaches like toothpaste? Do you know whether they want the fluoride or the other kind?
It's if they're hungry enough, they go for it.
Is it possible to get rid of them when you're in a building like that?
No.
You said that this is a work of fiction, not a memoir, and that you've also included experiences of your brother in it and fictionalized that as well. Is that a way of keeping the memory of your brother alive?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because my brother died very recently. He died last Thanksgiving. So it's just a couple of months ago, and I obviously didn't know he was going to die when I wrote the book. But because I was younger than Kimberly when we came to the United States, some of the experiences were really based upon my brother Kwan's life. He was closer to her age in the novel. So some things, like the sweatshop owner cutting our wages because we were working too fast, that happened to him. And he was a brilliant student and entered MIT at the age of 16.
Your mother, you say, inspired you to write this book. Now, she would not be able to read it, would she? Has she ever learned English?
No, she hasn't. She still says, "Jean, not home," when people call us on the phone. She hasn't, but she's very happy about it. She's very proud. And we've, you know, of course, explained the story to her and told her about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are, it is possible for people to live in certain communities in New York and I guess elsewhere and never learn to speak English because the communities become so insulated.
Well, you know, people have a common misconception that people choose not to learn English. But I think that if you were to imagine what it would be like to displace an older American lady and put her in Japan and say, well, now just go for it, you know, get a job, learn Japanese and take examinations in it, it's not that easy.
Now, you talked about working in the sweatshop. This is not a matter of choice. They were forced to work there to pay off their debt. The debt that they incurred when in coming here.
That's right. And it's not that, you know, someone put a gun to their heads and said, okay, you're forced to do this. But it was rather that when you move and you don't speak the language, so many of your most important skills are taken from you.
Well, how much does the trip usually cost?
Oh, several thousand dollars. But, you know, in this situation, in the novel, there are also, of course, health issues. But there's the visa. There's the whole long process of getting approval to come here on top and the lawyer's fees on top of the plane trip.
In this case, the money is fronted by a relative who then takes advantage of the family. I've always thought of Chinese families as being rather close-knit.
Well, I think Chinese families are very close-knit, as other families are. However, like every other kind of family, the relationships are complicated. So underneath it, you have genuine love, but there's jealousy, there's competition, there's guilt, there's obligation. That's not limited to Chinese families.
Jean Kwok is my guest. Her novel, Girl in Translation, is published by Riverhead. You've said that this book is really a love story. We see any romantic relationships in the book, but isn't the most important relationship the love between Kimberly and her mother?
I think you're right. I think that Kimberly and her mother are an incredibly important relationship in the book.
Kimberly goes to a public school in Brooklyn, although she lives in Manhattan's Chinatown. Why would she do that?
She lives in Brooklyn, but she is, what you're right, in that she goes to a school that's different from the one she's zoned for, and that was because she was in such a bad area that she used a false address.
But wouldn't it have been better for her to go to the school in Chinatown where the other kids speak Cantonese?
I think that she definitely feels in the book that she wishes she was in Chinatown, and her story would have been easier in some ways if she had been in Chinatown. However, there are many immigrants that are scattered all throughout New York.
And there are certain cultural differences that manifest themselves in disastrous ways. She folds her hands behind her back as a sign of respect to the teacher and gets yelled at on the very first day.
Mm-hmm.
So how does she manage to do so well, considering the fact that she doesn't have other Chinese kids? She doesn't have a bilingual school. She winds up earning a scholarship to an exclusive private school.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that is very possible, and I believe that because I did as well. So I think that one of the points I wanted to make in the book is how very alone an immigrant child is and how they don't really have support. But Kimberly was born with a talent for school.
But there's also a class factor here. She's embarrassed by the quality of the clothing she's wearing.
Absolutely.
Aside from the obvious embarrassment, her being hiding her underwear because it's handmade by her mother. What are some of the things that she has to deal with other students in the private school?
Well, she obviously comes from a completely different class. And when she encounters this, you know, really well-to-do families, there's so many things that are taken for granted that she can take for granted. She doesn't even have markers at home to make a diorama or a poster.
The parents of one of Kim's classmates refuse to believe that Kim works in a factory after school because they say child labor doesn't exist in the United States. When I lived in Chinatown, it was apparent to me where the sweatshops were, and I was always amazed that they weren't raided.
They are. I mean, they are inspected, but I think that, like as in the book, in the inspection scene, when they're inspected, all of the children disappear.
And you say also there are payoffs.
Yes.
So Because the inspectors kind of know where the kids are, don't they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I really am not qualified to judge. I really don't know. And I would have to say that at this point, most of the sweatshops have moved back to China.
Do the children working in sweatshops grow up faster than other kids?
I think that working children grow up faster than other kids.
Then there's a whole matter of immigrant children because they're put into uncomfortable roles. They become their parents' parent in many situations because they have to deal with English speakers. They have to fill out forms. They have to act as translators for their parents. And it kind of infantilizes their parents.
Well, I don't think it infantilizes the parents. You do have a kind of child-parent reversal. I think that's true. That's inevitable. But one of the things I tried to show in the book is that although Kimberly practically, in a practical sense, has to take a great deal of responsibility, her mother is still a mother in her own language. Even though she doesn't speak English, she still teaches her and guides her as best she can.
You wound up going to Harvard, but worked four jobs to support yourself to get through. Do you see yourself as a unique case?
No, absolutely not. I think that there are a lot of people like me.
And you wound up, when did you decide you want to be a writer?
I decided at Harvard. So before then, I was really in math and science, although I loved English and it was very important to me. But I really felt that it was too scary and risky a choice to become a writer.
You live in the Netherlands now with your husband and two sons. So was that another language to learn?
Yes, it was.
Do your children translate Dutch for you?
No. My Dutch is good enough.
And do you also still speak Chinese? You speak Cantonese and Mandarin?
I speak Cantonese, and I have to because, of course, my mother doesn't speak English.
The life that Kimberly and her mother experience here is so incredibly difficult at the beginning. Do you think that reading your book will, in some ways, be an inspiration for would-be immigrants, or at least a warning?
Well, I do hope so. I do hope that, you know, there was a time in my life when a book gave me hope, you know, when books were really a source of hope. And I hope that my book is also that for other people.
Jean Kwok's book is called Girl in Translation. It is published by Riverhead. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
It was my pleasure.